Welcome, all writers and readers from all four corners of the page. This is the Fanfiction Tapes, and I'm Dylan, your host today. And with me, I have...
Maya, pronouns she, her.
Barry, pronouns yo.
And I'm our producer, Ian, pronouns he, him.
Today, our topic of discussion is the storytelling narrative performance known as professional wrestling. Ah, yeah. Excited for this one. So, who wants to give me what they know about professional wrestling? Let's establish a base here. Barry, how familiar are you with the graps?
Very. I started watching around 2009, 2010. Mm-hmm. I became a fan because of SmackDown vs. Raw 2008, which, aside from nostalgia, is not
a bad game.
Great. It's pretty shit. But that's how I started, and ever since then, I've been a huge fan. I watch old matches, I watch new matches. I just love wrestling, and I know a lot about it.
We'll go on to Maya. Maya.
So most of what I know about wrestling comes in the phrase, it's not actually real combat. Yeah, that's about it.
Okay, and Ian?
I've never followed it, but I've got a lot of, I suppose you could say, cultural osmosis about it. My last roommates were really into one of the WrestleMania games, so... We shared an Xbox, but I'm the actual owner of said Xbox, so my Xbox Live account has a lot of WrestleMania achievements associated with it, even though I never played that game myself. Cool. Other than that, I know that Vince McMahon is one of the world's biggest pieces of shit, because yes. Behind the Bastards did a 6-part series on him.
Yes, true. And that is before even more allegations came out about him. This man is worse than Henry Kissinger somehow.
Damn.
Yeah.
And don't forget, that's he covered a bar. Up for murder.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, my history with wrestling is I started watching around January 2010. So the first ever experience I had was watching, I think it was WWE Vintage, which was a show that showed old matches. And I got to watch the 1996 Royal Rumble, which convinced me to buy the 2010 Royal Rumble, all the way to WrestleMania 26. And I've been pretty much a fan on and off since then. So, you know, over a decade, nearly a decade and a half. But just to give you guys some context, the wrestling industry started off as a sideshow at carnivals. That's why typically the worst people in wrestling are called carnies, because, yeah, get back to the circuses.
Yep, people always go, we gotta bring it back to the golden age. What's the golden age? I don't know, probably not the carnies.
No, the golden age was definitely the NWA era. So the NWA era in North America was basically a bunch of territories and regional promotions who all worked together in sort of... and an alliance, you know, the National Wrestling Alliance. That's what it was called. And that basically existed and was the thing until Vince McMahon started expanding his regional promotion that he bought off his father for $1 million, I believe, or somewhere in that region, in 1984.
Around just that a era. Small sum of money.
I mean, 1984, that's like... What are we talking about these days, guys? That's quite a bit of dosh.
Let me see if I can pull up an inflation calculator.
Sure, while you're doing that. So Vince McMahon brings Hulk Hogan in, makes him his champion, partners with MTV, who are also based in New York, where his regional promotion is, runs WrestleMania 1 in Madison Square Garden, which his father had been promoting in for years. And gets over 1 million viewers on CCTV.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. $1 million in 1984 is almost $3 million today.
Yeah.
And 75 cents.
But yeah. Vince, Vince McMahon then has a great era known as the Hulkamania era, where he basically buys up most of the U.S. and kills off nearly all the territories except for Jim Crockett Promotions, which gets bought out by Ted Turner to become WCW. However, Vince McMahon liked his wrestlers big and sweaty and meaty, and mostly through using steroids. When Congress caught wind of this, they took Vince McMahon to the Supreme Court, who failed to prosecute him. No surprises. Supreme Court bad.
They're a disappointment to us all.
Totally. This leads into the new generation, which was a focus on more athletic, smaller wrestlers, and also the worst period in wrestling history in North America. Buy rates, attendances, merchandise, all numbers down across North America. The explosion happens back in popularity in 1996, but not in the WWF, but WCW, with the introduction of the New World Order. The NWO, which was in WCW. Then, taking inspiration from Paul Heyman's Extreme Championship Wrestling, Vince McMahon revolutionized the WWF with the Attitude Era, which brought wrestling its highest TV ratings in, like, was sort of that time, you know, when there's a lot more to see on TV compared to, like, the 80s.
I wouldn't know. I don't have cable.
I don't think you had cable in 1998, Diva. Considering
I did not, in fact.
Yeah, considering you were not alive.
I also was not alive in 1998.
Ian, what was 1998 like?
I don't remember much of my childhood.
Amazing. But anyway, from there, we went into the Ruthless Aggression era. Things sort of continued. PG came in because Vince McMahon's wife wanted to run for Senate. She didn't get elected twice. Thank you, Connecticut.
Ooh, PG.
And we're into the now network era and modern era, which, you know, is what is happening right now. So generally, wrestling has defined periods. Everything sort of before Vince McMahon took over the WWF, it's sort of just known as the Territories era, you know, and it's a bit of a golden age, you know, different people all across the country running their own promotions, a lot of different promotions making a lot of money. And there's a myth that Vince McMahon took wrestling out of, you know, the bingo halls and the TV studios, you know, these small venues into big stadiums. That's bullcrap. Plenty of other promotions ran big stadiums. Especially in like areas like WCCW World Class Championship Wrestling in Texas, run by the Von Erichs, who managed to sell out entire stadiums, you know. So don't let Vince McMahon rewrite history and tell you, oh, I was the one who made wrestling great. He wasn't. It was already great. He just made it suck for everyone who wasn't him.
Yeah, basically. Not like that's anything new.
Yeah, obviously there's a lot of wrestling outside of North America as well, or even the US as well. You have promotions like Triple R, CMLL, and as well as New Japan, All Japan, Noah, so on and so forth, Dragon Gate and Stardom. And of course, in the Monday, we do have a USA number 2 in All Elite Wrestling. So let's just give you an idea of the landscape. Currently, WWE are actually good, since Vince McMahon was forced to step down because terrible things.
Tons of terrible things.
And is currently run by former wrestler Triple H, who has somehow repaired his reputation after being a terrible politicker backstage. So yeah, that's a general idea on what the landscape of pro wrestling is like. I would like to put there to you guys, what do you guys know about pro wrestling in terms of how it works? You know, I'll leave you for last, Barry, so we'll let the two in experience. We'll go backwards. We'll let Ian go first. Tell me what you know about how pro wrestling works.
Okay, so I know that, like, the most important thing, like, story-wise is kayfabe. And I think that's a term that actually dates back to the Carney era. I think that that originates in Carney slang, if I'm correct about that.
I mean, probably.
Okay. I'm the linguistics nerd here after all.
Well, if they were speaking Carney, it would have been kizafabe, but that's a different subject.
I mean, I can see how it might go from something like kizafabe to just kayfabe. A little easier to say, but like that's the concept that you're always on as your persona in public. You might hate each other backstage, but if the spot says that you are friends in the ring, you are buddies in public, or vice versa. And that's about it. That's what I know about professional wrestling from the story side.
Funny that you should mention that. It's a great anecdote about how the Iron Sheik, this hated foreign heel, and Jim Duggan, this rah-rah-rah Americana babyface, were arrested together because they were caught with a DUI, driving under the influence. And when it was reported in the papers, people went, holy shit, wrestling is fake. The heel and the babyface were driving together. It's crazy. Next, you're telling me dogs and cats are breeding together.
Jesus Christ. Oh, wait, no, hold on.
That's going a bit far.
But that's the idea of the time, you know. People couldn't believe it. The bad guy and the good guy were in the car together. Joker and Batman were driving together to the next show on crack.
Unbelievable. Well, I mean, if Joker was having his way, they would be driving together on crack.
Maya, what are you familiar about how with pro wrestling works? Any concepts you understand?
I don't really have much of an understanding, but from what we've watched in preparation for this episode, it just kind of seems like kink for conservatives.
We showed Maya a few matches. I know in general I showed Ian two matches. Barry is a wrestling fan. Maya, what did you think of what you did watch? And Ian, you can mention too.
I mean, I really did only watch two matches, and I only watched what would be the culmination of those storylines. So I was, honestly, I was not impressed. It felt kind of weak sauce. Like, there were a lot of very impressive parts to it. In particular, the shit they did with their bodies was pretty clearly impressive, but it's like catching, you know, the season finale of a TV show without having watched the season beforehand.
Yeah, you needed to
watch very little impact to anything that happened.
You needed to watch 12 weeks of Raw, 12 weeks of SmackDown, and also two more pay-per-views to understand.
Yeah, I don't have time for that.
Yeah, that's the level of investment as a wrestling fan. It's hell.
Especially when those 12 weeks are 2 hours each.
Oh, 3 hours of Raw.
Oh, God, yeah.
I don't watch Raw live.
Who does anymore?
Boomers.
True.
Literally, we can see the data. Ian, what did you
think? So, Ian, do you watch Raw live then?
Wow.
I'm not that kind of boomer.
No, it's people over 49. That's their biggest market buyer.
Actually, I don't think even that age group is technically boomers.
No, but that's the
boomers
TV.
Boomers are in like their 60s.
No, but that's the TV boomer age group. Basically, in TV, the 18 to 49 demographic is the most important. And then I think you have 50 to 64 demographic, and then you have the 65 plus.
Wait. I'm not going to worry about why they split their demographics like that. It is not productive to the episode.
Capitalism. These people spend more. 18 to 40.
Okay, but
Anyway.
It's a stupid way to do it.
Yeah. Ian, what did you think of the matches I showed you?
So I'm going to disagree with Maya on one thing. I don't think it's kink for conservatives. It's drag for conservatives.
Elaborate.
No, I don't think I will.
Maya, do you have anything in response to Ian's statement?
Yeah, I do. I see where you're going with this. However, consider the following. There's a lot of work put in. Careful consideration of the scene and storyline. Regular check-ins. Concerns about safety. Yeah.
Okay, so on the other hand, it is also an extremely theatrical performance of masculinity.
So it's both.
Highly exaggerated. Yes. You know what? Yes, it's both.
It is funny to think about what you guys said, because the classic, as Barry would note, the classic idea which popularized, you know, around the time of the South Park episode around it was, oh, wrestling is for its redneck soap opera. Like, that's the classic idea. However, that's more of like, that actually links back to more of the territory days when you think about it. Because Vince McMahon was running out of New York. You know, not many rednecks in New York City going to Madison Square Garden for shows, you know. And
okay, there aren't that many rednecks in New York City, but New York State, there are certainly plenty.
Sure, but Madison Square Garden, heart of New York City, which the WWF promoted out for years. And Vince McMahon's territory was, you know, the Northeast and New England, you know. But generally, it was more of a working class thing. So that's where the general idea, I think, comes from, is the redneck. It's lower class wrestling. Whereas, sort of in the modern day, wrestling is more of a niche, I would say, comparable to anime. Would you agree, Barry?
Yeah. Basically. It's for people who like it, and I'm not sure how easy it is to get into it.
You know, most of the people I know who have been into wrestling have also been into anime, so I think you might be onto something there.
Yeah, I always do find it funny when people crap on wrestling, because they never crap on wrestling for the right reasons, you know. They always say, oh, it's fake, it's all this, it's hokey, whatever. It's like, compared to what you would watch, no, it's just not your thing, okay? You can't get suspend your disbelief for wrestling. Like, those are the issues. It's nothing else, okay? You're not buying for that reason. It's either not your thing or you just can't suspend your disbelief. It's not because it's too hokey, because you will watch a hokier thing. I swear, there is a TV show, a web series, an anime, something that you watch that is more cringe than wrestling, and you enjoy it. Do not stand on your superiority of content and look down upon professional wrestling. You know, you are in the mud with us.
Yeah.
We all roll in the poop. You just act like you are superior. I am on my soapbox in the farm, okay?
You can tell.
Not a very clean soapbox.
No, I'm just saying, look, you're all in here with us. You just want to make it seem like you aren't.
I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me.
Nitro Shack. So, in general, what would you say interests you or fascinates you about professional wrestling? What's up with you, Barry? What drives you to enjoy, you know, the sport?
Okay, prepare for a 30-minute yap session, all right? So, first of all, here's how wrestling works. Not why it works, that's later in the script, but how it works. So, basically you get two guys or two girls, sometimes a guy and a girl. That's sometimes frowned upon.
You get two people.
Yes, you get two folks.
Well, except when you don't in this mall, but yeah, general.
You get two or more folks. You put them together. You work out who wins and what crazy stuff they do, and then they go and do it. Some people say wrestling is fake. I don't know if I'd put it that way, because it is pre-planned, and they do try not to hurt each other, but people get hurt. Like, you're never going to... Like, with all the flippy shit they do, you're never going to go, like, the way they flew through that, the way they hurt themselves there was fake. Because no, people hurt themselves doing this. Put some respect on their name.
They shouldn't.
They shouldn't.
It should be safer.
But they do. It's like if football and ballet were tied together.
You know what? Given the lack of, like, treatment of football players, yeah. Yeah.
There you go. That's the in-ring aspect of it. Two athletic people, they do flippy stuff, and they try not to hurt each other. The story of it is this interconnected web of larger-than-life characters that either improvise or, through a script, talk mad spit about each other and get you excited for the match. Ian mentioned kayfabe earlier, and that is a part of it, but it's not really a thing anymore. Like, wrestlers will photograph each other in public when they're supposed to be hating each other. Like, it's not a big thing anymore.
Kayfabe is dead, pretty much.
Yeah. Kayfabe is dead, and everyone killed it.
Yeah, it's mostly a thing for little kids now.
There are some wrestlers who still stand by it, like MJF, but, like, it's not, like, unless he really is an asshole.
I mean, it would be kind of impossible to maintain in the, like, modern information age.
Yeah.
I mean, just look at, right, like, with, you know, any case of wrestlers that, you know, the storyline says they shouldn't like each other or shouldn't interact. You know, 40, 30 years ago, it would have been a lot easier for them to interact in a way that was not then immediately documented and spread to quite a lot of the people engaging with the content. Now, move the wrong way and all of Reddit has heard about it.
Yeah,
the actual fun thing in the post-kayfabe world is the disinformation age, where wrestlers feed information to wrestling journalists and basically make the storyline seem more real through saying, oh yeah, no, there are actual problems between these two guys in this program. Like, they've pissed each other off with what they said. And it's like, and then those two wrestlers are laughing together, but have put out the disinformation that, like, no, they actually don't like each other. It's a great thing.
It's a pretty creative way to handle that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how it works. As for why I like it, because it's fun. It's fun to just watch two people piss around and flip around, you know? It's fun to sit through a fictional story and then have it happen live in front of you.
Like, that is another aspect, right, that I believe Super Eye Patch Wolf said in one of his wrestling videos about how the time in pro wrestling is completely different to any other sort of medium that we experience. If you watch Raw live, what you are watching is happening the same time right there. And you won't see the story progression happens at the same time too. There are no time skips. There are no flashbacks. They are just, you know, what you see is what you see. And you see at the same time as the story is presented.
Exactly.
It's wholly unique because, you know, even television shows, you know, or any radio broadcasts or stuff that is narrative based, and there's nothing on that level as big as pro wrestling, I would say.
I agree. There is nothing like it to its scale.
Like, if you want to look at the other side, we mostly been comparing it narratively. But if you compare it to other sports, especially things like boxing and UFC, those things can be quite boring. Because at the end of the day, it is a sport. And the goal is not to entertain. That is the entire point of wrestling. The point of wrestling is to entertain. The point of boxing, the point of UFC, of MMA in general, is to win.
Exactly.
It's just they try to make it entertaining enough to where, you know, you buy it. And they pull a lot of modern sort of stuff. And you see a lot of fighters, a lot of boxers, they pull inspiration from wrestling characters to make themselves more popular. Because wrestling is the blueprint of how to make yourself a popular sports athlete, I feel like.
We are not going to talk about the time that wrestling took inspiration from boxing. We are not going to introduce Ian and Maya to the Brawl for All. We are not.
To keep me away from Vince Russo. I'll destroy him.
Remember, if you like Finn Balor, you're gay.
I actually, Vince Russo replied to me once because I told him you're a carny hack because you wrote a miscarriage storyline. He was like, bro, it's on TV. It made people watch, bro. I'm like, yeah, you're still a carny hack. Who gives a shit?
So, I'm a little confused as to how there's a miscarriage storyline in wrestling.
So she was kayfabe pregnant, and then she got knocked off the apron to have a kayfabe miscarriage.
Fake baby.
Yeah.
That's...
like how on TV, people don't actually get pregnant. This cat person was not actually pregnant.
Okay, I think I missed a few key words there because I thought we were still talking about like the WWE. So I was.
I mean, this did happen in the WWE.
Huh. Yeah, I've never heard of WWE wrestlers being men, so I was slightly confused.
Oh no, there's women wrestlers.
Yeah, they have main evented the biggest show of the year twice now. So yeah.
This was years ago, though. Like, women wrestlers were not treated well.
No. We're talking about 1998 prime. Oh, how do we get people to want to watch women? Take their clothes off.
This was during the heyday of, like, bra and panties matches.
Yeah. Women's wrestlers are not promoted as wrestlers, but promoted as sex objects that you oogle at and or take piss breaks while they do their segment.
Welcome to women's sports.
Yeah. Fortunately, with what Ronda Rousey did in MMA, proving that women can be a big money draw, wrestling soon followed, with fans demanding, hey, we know these women's wrestlers can work, give them the time, give them the stage, they will do well. And now, in modern wrestling, that does happen a lot more often.
Actually, appropriately enough, I'm wearing a professional women's hockey league jersey at the moment.
Hell yeah.
But of course, women's wrestling wasn't, you know, this, we're talking about North America here, but there were women wrestling in Japan that drew out the Tokyo Dome, I believe, in the mid-90s. All Japan's women did mega money. And in modern day, you look at things like Stardom, which is a big Japanese promotion that is all women. That is the difference. In Japan, it's a lot more segregated, where you have all women promotions and all men promotions. There are a few that are mixed. But while you would think, well, that's kind of crappy, it's actually good because now you've got an entire show just dedicated, an entire promotion dedicated to women, you know? While there have been strides made by New Japan to more integrate women into its roster, mostly to westernify it, I still believe that an all-women's promotion, it's an amazing thing.
Of course, we did screw that up way back when, too.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, another thing about pro wrestling is you get these storylines and the ongoing storylines that last years, you know, whether you get your general storylines that, you know, have a beginning and end, but you have more open narratives that continue throughout a wrestler's career. Whether it is just the Undertaker's streak, which I showed Ian and Maya some videos of those matches with Shawn Michaels, that was a storyline that started in 1991 and continued until 2014. Like, that, what other mediums can run a narrative, a sole narrative, for that long?
Yeah.
You know? Do you want me to answer? Because I will.
An ongoing weekly narrative from 1991 until 2014.
2002 to today.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
I'm scared. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, there it is.
Ian from the future here, because nobody bothered to mention this during the recording. Maya dropped a link to the webcomic El Gunish Shive in our text chat.
But to understand, like, what that means is, like, you know, we've seen wrestlers, you know, hundreds, thousands of wrestlers probably, right, Barry?
Yeah.
And we've seen, you know, interesting careers all over the place, from the likes of Cody Rhodes, the son of a son of a plumber, who left WWE, made himself a huge star, and then came back and is now going for his second WrestleMania main event in a row, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we witnessed this in real time. We've seen him at his lowest as a knockoff of his brother's gimmick, back to the highest where he's, you know, arguably a bigger star than his legendary father was.
Or if you want a more mainstream example of this, John Cena. Dude was basically just a random dude who rapped, and then he became one of the biggest stars of the planet.
Even before he started rapping, he was on the chopping block for a while, and they were considering letting him go until he got over with the audience with his rapping gimmick.
Yep.
Now, Barry.
Yo.
A question.
Yes.
What do you think of the state of modern wrestling? As in, what I'm going to talk to you about is primarily AEW, because I think WWE have found their balance of story and match.
Right.
Do you think that AEW relies a little too much in its weekly television, in its presentation of the match, is more important than the story? Do you think that is a true statement?
Yeah, I think AEW does put a lot more focus on the matches than the storyline. I'm not going to say that's necessarily a problem for me, but it is something they do, where it feels like you mostly get the story through who runs in after the match more than promo or package, you know?
Yeah. And it's interesting we do speak about that, because, like, if I were to ask you guys, what would get you to want to watch another match, or a match in general? Would it be to watch a match and go, that was good, I want to see more? Or see sort of a narrative beat or a promo where they explain to you, we are going to have a match, and here is my motivation, and here's my opponent's motivation, and why I want to beat them. Ian and Maya, what ones do you think would have you want to watch the next match more? Suppose I put it in this way. If you had a villain, would you rather see the villain have a close fight with a side character before the main character? Or would you rather the villain, you know, monologues and maybe kill someone very easily before fighting the main character?
I mean, it depends on what you're doing with it. Like, both of those could be interesting to me.
I do have to say I am partial to a good villain monologue.
Essentially, the idea is that Doom matches without story, can they be interesting, you know? Which
matches without story.
Yes, essentially, we have put two guys in the ring, and they are very good, and I just want to see them go against each other.
I mean, probably. It wouldn't draw me in, but I assume it could interest.
It's fine, but it's missing something. Would you agree, Barry, in that sense?
Yeah, I mean...
I see what you're getting at here.
It's kind of like... So that happens a lot during the weekly shows for, like, the mid-card and such. But I find the most interesting matches are the ones where I am attached. Like, I am glued to the screen. I want to see the story. I want something to unfold, you know?
Yeah. It's about the stakes. It's about the characters, about the story. If one of those is lacking, then you're kind of just leaning on, oh, these moves are fun, and I'm enjoying it.
Oh, I like it when they do the funny thing. Okay, but does the funny thing mean anything?
Yeah. I'm not saying it's impossible to tell a story exclusively through matches, but it is a lot more difficult and doesn't always translate as well. As seen with this recent storyline where we've had Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins going up against Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Roman Reigns, we have not seen a single match. I think there was one. I think Solo Sikoa, who is associated with The Rock and Roman Reigns, fought, I think, Seth at one point. Besides that, that's the one match that has occurred involving the storyline and those participants. You know, this has been building since, what, 2 weeks after the Rumble?
Yeah.
So if you think about that, and this is the most anticipated match, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas, would it have been as entertaining if we had, you know, Cody and Seth go through and fight Solo and Jimmy, and then the other fight Solo and Jimmy, and then maybe one of them faces Roman Reigns, and then who knows? It's easier to tell a story when you tell just the story and don't make it too complicated or add a lot of elements or make people wonder, why are we doing this? Why are we side questing at the moment? Yeah, because I feel sometimes that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
Why are we on the side quest?
No, I love side quests as much as the next gamer, but sometimes when I want to do the story, I want to just see the story.
Yeah, show me the main story, you know?
Show me the main quest, and if it's not good, then we go side questing. That's why I've never finished Skyrim. But, like, that's my perspective on it, is that if I'm interested in your story, just show me the story. You know?
Yeah. It's especially in the modern age where it's not difficult to find a good match. It is not. Like, finding a good match is not hard. There are probably about 15 good matches a week across the world.
Yeah.
Maybe more on a really good week like this weekend that we are recording this. But what we do not have enough of, I think, in the modern day is fantastic storylines, these top-tier ones.
Yep, which is why the Bloodline is such a breath of fresh air, and why Cody is such a breath of fresh air.
Yes, though I do have to say the Bloodline did stall for like a year.
A little.
Yeah, They were sniffing their own farts there for about a year. They say, oh, this is so good. It's like, nothing is happening. We are spinning our wheels here.
We're doing donuts in the parking lot, and we're not getting to our destination.
Yeah. So, Ian, Maya, I showed you those matches. I just want to ask you about elements of it. So, we'll start off with the first match we watched, which was Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair. Obviously, this was a career-threatening match for Ric Flair that, if he lost, he would have to retire. What did you think of the story presented in the match of this sort of wily old veteran against this, you know, other caliber of legend going up against him? This guy who wants to defeat one of his heroes, but also doesn't at the same time because he doesn't want to be the guy who retired his hero. What did you think about the psychology sort of in that match?
I mean, honestly, I wasn't really that impressed.
Mm-hmm.
It was okay. But, I mean, I got the sense that just, like, I didn't have the history with those wrestlers and their characters that kind of made that what it was, right? For me, it was white guy number one against older white guy number two. with stakes that I didn't really get.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, if the old guy loses, he has to retire. Well, I mean, kind of looks like he maybe should be already. And why is the other guy here?
Mm-hmm.
And, so yeah, I mean, I just...
Okay, Ian, what did you think of that match?
I got the impression that it was entirely created to end this guy's career on a high note.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I did not have the context and background to be invested in it all that much.
Sure. Now, Barry, what do you think of Ric Flair versus Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 24, the career-threatening match?
As someone who has that context, it was phenomenal. It was great storytelling. It was great wrestling. But I do have to say, I understand where Maya and Ian are coming from, because these are people with careers in the decades who have descended from greatness time and again and ascended back to it time and again. And I feel like just a video package alone wouldn't really sell you on the prelude to this.
Mm-hmm.
But as someone with that context, it was really good.
Yeah, the video packages did not impress. Like, I know you said they're great, and I would assume that they're better if I had any of the context, but I was just like, ah, I see. Images. I think the, specifically the third video package, the one on the third match you showed me, that one was the one that was the best, partly because... Mm-hmm. I had seen at least the match before. I had a little bit more context, but also there was, well, for one, I could actually watch it in above 120p.
Helps when you can see what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Turns out when we started attempting to watch it, RMO was updating, so my internet was dog shit.
My moment, everyone. Yeah, so what I do think is it's so difficult to get into wrestling, you know, to find that jumping on point. Essentially, what you have to do is you got to jump on and just wait until you see a start of a new story. All right? And then through osmosis, you'll likely just consume information. Like, that's how me and Barry did it. Like, we became wrestling fans in 2009-10 era. But we could tell you about stuff that happened in the 80s and 90s, early 2000s, you know. Period, for long periods where we were not alive or did not watch wrestling.
Yeah. I think wrestling is like a comic book. It's not easy to get into because of the longevity and the storylines, but every match and every event will be someone's first, and in those events, maybe not the match is singular, but in those events, you will find something to attach yourself to, and from there, everything else will become worth it.
Yeah.
Or just be like me, and play a, at the time, decent wrestling game, and then you'll have what you need.
Yeah.
Keyword is my at the time.
Yeah, my first wrestling game was SVR 2010.
Ooh, that one was a nice one.
It's pretty good, yeah. I think 11 is better, and then like the peak is like 12, and then 2K14.
Yeah, yeah. If I had played 2007 instead of 2008, I would have not only been a fan earlier.
A lot better game. Yes.
Yeah. The best part of 08 is the GM mode, and like even then, it was 07 to still did it better.
Yeah. We did watch a second match. We all did. I only watched the third one. But what did you guys generally think of Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker at WrestleMania 25? Maya, in general, what can I hear about you out of this 30-minute epic that is considered one of the best matches in WWE history? From your perspective.
I wouldn't call it an epic.
Mm-hmm.
Too short.
What, 30 minutes?
Okay, yeah, by wrestling match standards?
Yeah.
Look, epics are like at least a couple of hours of content, okay?
Not really. A 10-minute song is pretty epic. Because your average song is like 3 minutes.
It depends on the genre. 10-minute songs, while yes, impressive as a performance, are more common in certain genres.
Yeah. Okay, a 10-minute pop song. That would be insane.
That would be bizarre, I think. I don't know. I don't really listen to pop.
But the general TV match is like 7 to 9 minutes, and that's a long TV match. Your average pay-per-view match is probably about 16 to 20 minutes. An epic is like over 30. You can have like an excellent 25 match, but an epic typically goes over 30.
Epic novels are considered by some to be upwards of 200,000 words.
Yeah.
And your average novel is probably going to be around 50,000.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a lot easier to watch a 30-minute wrestling match.
I'm just going to say, if a wrestling match was 2.5 hours, I would descend into the abyss.
The only way you can do that is if it's like a rumble.
Yeah.
Even at that, when they did a 50-man rumble, I think that went like 1:30. Yeah, kind of shit.
Yeah.
Ian, what did you think of Taker versus Michaels at Mania 25?
I was actually pretty entertained by it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad the Undertaker won. I think if I did follow professional wrestling, he'd probably be like my favorite. Mm-hmm. I really like that gimmick and aesthetic.
The Undertaker.
No one in the call is surprised by this at all.
The Undertaker.
It is the greatest gimmick in history, you know.
Because it appeals to anybody. You know, just a dark guy who's really big and hits people good.
But it also has, like, that slight horror elements. Ian popped big at the Jason Voorhees spot.
Just sits straight up.
There you go.
I am almost always a sucker for an underdog.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely kind of liked HBK a little bit more. especially when you mentioned the politics of the two. I was just like, oh, well, I can't like that one anymore.
Yeah, that's the thing. When being a wrestling fan, you really gotta disassociate the character from the real person. It's like, oh yeah, Hulk Hogan, go get him, Hulk. No, Terry Bollea, brother. You wouldn't like Terry Bollea.
He's an equal opportunity racist.
Isn't he also kind of, I don't know if this is confirmed, but back in the day, they tried to form a union.
Yes.
And somebody snitched to management, and it was probably him.
Former governor of Minnesota, Jesse Ventura, back when he was a wrestler, tried to start a union, and Hulk Hogan told Vince McMahon.
Snitch.
Yep. Hulk Hogan the scab, who would have thought?
Not a shock to me.
Nope. He crossed that picket line in a second, brother.
Also, the first time you see Undertaker sit straight up, it's iconic.
Yeah, considering this guy has been around since 1990. You know, as that character.
Yep.
And, you know, also speak to the longevity of wrestling characters. And how even they evolve, as I mentioned to you guys. There was a period of Undertaker's career where he stopped being a dead man and instead was a biker man who came out to Limp Bizkit rolling.
Yep.
Which is very, you know, of the times.
The American badass.
Yes.
You know, who likes Roland in 2024 besides wrestling fans? No one.
I don't even think people like Limp Bizkit anymore besides wrestling fans.
I don't think people at the time like Limp Bizkit.
That's true.
I still listen to nu metal and I never liked Limp Bizkit.
I love nu metal and I only listen to Roland and Break Stuff. The rest is just kind of noise.
Oh, come on, My Way.
Okay.
My Way is a banger.
Okay. Three Limp Bizkit songs, but...
I always preferred Saliva, though.
Saliva's good.
Other wrestling-associated artists include Creed. Yeah. Mm. Christian Rock. And Kid Rock. Ugh. That's the appropriate Kid Rock. That's the appropriate reaction to Kid Rock.
Also, I love breaking down the Undertaker's gimmick through all of its eras because it just sounds stupid after a while. He's an undead Wild West mortician biker who also wants moonlit as a cult leader and loves MMA. Like, what do you do with that information?
Yeah. Cult leader, undead, Wild West mortician, also biker.
Gets
also enjoys MMA.
gets an inexplicable power boost around March to April on 1 to 2 nights.
Also has a kayfabe brother who burnt himself.
And also gets his power from a mystical urn.
That sometimes has light, sometimes has smoke, sometimes just has ashes. Depending on what they need at the time.
And also his manager has died like 15 times before dying in real life.
Also once returned to his home planet, Royal Rumble 1994. I have to go now. My planet needs me. Note, Undertaker died on his way back to his home planet.
And once fought himself.
He did fight himself. SummerSlam 1994.
There you go.
What?
Yeah.
It was Undertaker versus Underfaker. They had a fake Undertaker. Which is different from the UK Undertaker, which was a guy who went around caravan parks pretending to be the Undertaker.
I love wrestling.
Fascinating.
Now, was fake Undertaker versus Undertaker better than Kane versus fake Kane?
No. Kane versus fake Kane was better because that had Luke Gallows.
It also had a movie tie-in.
Yeah.
See No Evil.
There you go.
What a movie promotion, by the way, to make a storyline on your wrestling program promoting the date of your movie.
May 19th.
May 19th. Every wrestling fan knows it. So, I'll just give this quick question before we end off to our resident non-wrestling fans. Maya, do you think you will be watching any more wrestling in your future?
Not particularly, unless you, like, drag me into it, or through whatever freakish set of circumstances it happens to be on and I'm in the same room and there's nothing else I would rather watch or read.
Yeah, we're going to have to force Maya to go through some men-loving men, golden lovers wrestling storyline.
We can manage that.
Or maybe we just show her what Tony Storm and Mariah May are doing at the moment. And Ian, do you think you'll be watching any pro wrestling in the future?
Not of my own volition.
Alrighty then. I think the referee has called it. We have come to a time limit draw, apparently. We're going into overtime a little bit here. But anyway, Ian, do we have anything in the mailbag? Is anyone making a run-in down the ramp to tell us their thoughts on our show?
There is nothing in the mailbox today. So if anybody listening wants to write in about why the hell are we, the fan fiction tapes, talking about professional wrestling, you can send us an email at fanfictapes@gmail.com. You can also send us a complaint on Twitter. Maya runs that channel.
Yep, it's a channel, not an account. Totally. Anywho, at fanfiction tapes with a capital F and a capital T, all one word, no spaces anywhere. I post on there sometimes about episodes. I really need to be better about posting, but sometimes we post about things there.
Alrighty, yeah.
Channel, account, same difference. Anyways, you can also leave us feedback on our YouTube page or via Apple Podcast rating and review. We very much appreciate anybody who leaves us feedback.
Yeah. Some would say we were a four-star podcast, but I say if we were in the Tokyo Dome, they would give us five. So, that is the end of our episode. And with that, we'll go through everyone. I am and always will be Dylan, and today I was joined by...
Maya, pronouns she, her.
Barry, pronouns he, him.
And I am Ian. Until next time, bye.